Good morning. You've tuned into the KRFY Morning Show. Thank you for joining us this morning. A mostly beautiful May 28th, the last Thursday in May. Several guests this morning, and among them are representatives from the Native Plant Society. We've got Bob and Gail in the studio with us, not to mention Diane sitting across from me. This is Jack hollering at you this morning, and I hope you're having a good one. Before we get into conversation about some plants and Arbor Day festivities, let's talk about the weather a little bit. It looks like right now it's pretty nice out, pretty lovely. About 55 degrees, and it certainly feels at least that warm coming down First Avenue, but 30% chance of showers later today with a high in the mid-70s. That doesn't sound so bad, but it does look like after 11 a.m. It's going to get kind of cloudy, and we might even get some thunderstorms. We'll have a nice morning, but then who knows? Might want to roll up your windows before you go into the office today. Calm wind becoming southeast around 5 miles an hour in the afternoon. New rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, so nothing to be too concerned about, although higher amounts are always possible in thunderstorms. Looking into the weekend, scattered showers tonight, chance of showers tomorrow, slight chance of thunderstorms on Friday night. Saturday, looks like lower chance of thunderstorms. It's going to be clearing up over the weekend, partly sunny all weekend long, highs in the high 70s, but sometime this weekend, there's a good chance we're going to get some rain over the next few days, but who knows when that's going to be. Thanks to the National Weather Service for that information. Now, without further ado, let's say good morning to Bob Wilson and Gail Bolin. Good morning, you two. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are here as representatives today of the Native Plant Society. Is that correct?
And that's Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society.
Right. And I know I don't like to pronounce that word if I don't have to. The Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society. I always want to throw in an extra syllable or one too few, which is, well, before we talk about why specifically you're here, what's the basic details of that, of your organization? What's the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society, Gail?
Okay, it was founded, what year? I forgot. 1997?
Somewhere back in the 90s. I'm not quite sure what the exact
date was. There was a lady here, her name's Lois Weiss, and so she put out a little flyer around town asking people whether they would be interested in forming a Native Plant Society, and 60 people showed up for the first meeting. And at that time, the state of Idaho has the Idaho Native Plant Society, and we became the Kinnikinnick chapter of the Idaho Native Plant Society. Later, we pulled away from the state and formed our own, so we're independent of the state, but we kept our name. So mm-hmm. we're the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society, which is a plant, and yes, it's kind of difficult to pronounce, but once you get the hang of it, it flows pretty easy.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bob.
I was just going to say, we have several areas that we emphasize. Both plant conservation is very important to our group, but as well as just in general, educating people about what the native plants are, what they do for our environment, and how they benefit us. We also have a landscape group that likes to promote the use of native plants in landscapes as a way to conserve water and other resources. So it's a big group. It's a very active group. There's a lot going on there.
We have about 120 members. We have general meetings where we host a guest speaker. With a range of topics, all relating directly or indirectly to native plants. We meet on the fourth Saturday of the month, except July, August, and December, at the Sandpoint Community Hall, 9:45 a.m. It's open and free to the public.
Well, there you go. The fourth Saturday. That's coming right up, isn't it?
Maybe. Yes, and the speaker this coming Saturday will be Kathy Cousins from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game with an update on the Clark Fork Delta Restoration Project, which is a huge project. They're using, they've planted 10,000 native plants so far, and another 10,000 to go.
Wow.
Wow, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit aware of what's going on out in Clark Fork. Diane, I'm sure you're more in the loop than I am on that. But
yeah, it's one of those things I'd like to volunteer for, and I just haven't had time. But I did do the tour.
Yeah. 10,000
this winter.
That's more than I expected.
That's just a fraction overall. Yeah. This is just one little section. I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands total.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact amount, but... So come out on
Saturday and learn a little more.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, no, that's in June.
Oh, okay.
And we've already had our meeting this month in May.
Okay.
But that'll be the fourth Saturday in June when Kathy will be there.
Okay. The native plants, it was kind of a hit from the get-go, it sounds like. 60 members just at the initial meeting.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, why are people so interested in native plants as opposed to... Well, why the Native Plant Society and not just the Plant Society, the Exotic Plant Society, for example?
Yeah, well, there certainly are gardening clubs and people that like gardening and like plants and plants from all over. And I don't just like native plants either. There are lots of interesting plants from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But learning about native plants, I think, just helps you appreciate where you are now. And what things are going on around you out in the forest, and maybe not just native plants, but learn a little bit more about some of the problems that are posed by plants that are introduced not native here. Some of the noxious weeds and things that have come into our area and are threatening our native plants and native ecosystems.
Is it safe to say that the native plants here are generally, do they consume less water, less of our natural resources than some of the more exotic plants?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
they certainly grow out in the wild without any additional irrigation. Right. So if you're using them in a landscape situation, you can grow them using a lot less water, certainly a lot less than a lawn, for example, would use, and a fair amount less than many other commonly used landscape plants.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with native plants, it's important to get the right plant in the right place. All native plants are not created equal. Some like it wet, some like it dry, some like it in the shade, some like it in the sun. So just because you plant native does not necessarily mean you planted it in the right spot.
Hmm.
Well, if when you're walking in the woods, you'll notice certain plants that are growing in a moist, wet environment.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll see other plants growing on a sunny hillside. Well, if you put them in your yard, you need to replicate what they do in nature.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm sure I don't have much of a green thumb, so I would probably screw that up. But that's why the Native Plant Society is here. Help me out with that. The next question I have is, what are you here for to talk about today? What's coming up for the Native Plant Society? I'm thinking about the big one on June 6th.
It's the Arbor Day celebration in conjunction with the City of Sandpoint, and we will also be having a native plant sale. It's June the 6th, Saturday, June the 6th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Native Plant Arboretum. We maintain an arboretum that's next to the museum that is a showcase of native plants and their habitat.
This is out on near in Lakeview Park.
In Lakeview Park, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The museum is on South Ella Street. So if you find the museum, you'll find us.
You're there.
You're there.
Mm-hmm. Why? We were talking about this a little off the air, but why were you... June 6th is not the Arbor Day that people think of if they know the date.
Yeah.
Why, what's the story behind our
June 6th? This has evolved over the years. of course, Arbor Day, just to give you a little background on it, Arbor Day is something that is promoted by the National Arbor Day Foundation. And they like to encourage people to learn more about plants and to or more about trees and plant more trees. So they've set up an Arbor Day program, but each state, since they want to have people plant trees often on Arbor Day, each state across the country would have a different time of year to do that. So each state is allowed to set its own Arbor Day. So Arbor Day in one state isn't going to be the same as another necessarily. Now, Florida. Idaho's Arbor Day is typically in the end of April, but we had coupled it earlier on with some children's educational programs. We would have the kids come out from school, and we wound up too many times having just horrible, miserable, cold, wet weather in the end of April. So we've moved this event, the Arbor Day event, to the first week in June, when we can hopefully have better, more reliable, good weather. So a lot of this, the weather is pushing a lot of this. But we've also changed it in another way. We used to celebrate it on a Friday, which is during the school day. But now that we're on a Saturday, so more adults can attend, but it's not with the school programs. We've taken the school programs and invited the kids from the schools, local schools, to come for an educational program. It's usually the week before Arbor Day, although in this case it was came 2 weeks before Arbor Day. So it's still kind of attached to this event, but it's not celebrated on the same day. So we've got kind of an evolution in what we're doing here. But what we have added the plant sale aspect to it, which is kind of the main event for this day's activities, a native plant sale, and it's what draws in a lot of people.
And those plants come from Cedar Mountain Perennials, which Bob Wilson is and his wife Jill are the owners. They are both members of the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society, and I must say they have the best plants ever. They're very, very healthy.
Thank you, Gail.
You're welcome. They are. They're really good, healthy plants.
That's very, that's kind of you to say, and nice, a nice contribution, Bob. I'm glad. Nice to hear. The 2 weeks before, so that just happened, or is about to happen, the student tie-in?
That just happened this past week.
I see.
Yeah, there's Tuesday and Thursday this week.
I mean, okay. Do you know anything about how that went? How do the students usually like
it? I guess that's today. One of the events is today.
Well, I hope
no, I haven't heard back, but it's they have it set up where there's a series of six or seven stations, and they break the kids into smaller groups, and at each station they learn about a different kind of native tree, the cedar, the ponderosa pine, the larch and hemlock and so forth, because there's some really nice big examples of all of these over in our arboretum there.
That sounds I love the month of May when you're in school, and seems like people are starting to take more field trips, get out of there. The school's almost over, and you can get out and enjoy the native plants, among other things. I'm guessing that the students like that a great deal, better than sitting in a classroom and looking outside, admiring the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, looking out the window.
Yeah, I think they really look forward to that. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And it's mostly second and third graders, I believe. I think maybe just third graders that they invite.
I think third graders this year, yeah.
One of our members is a retired school teacher, so she kind of is the one that's in charge of inviting all of the elementary kids to the Arboretum.
So coming up in a couple, it's not this Saturday, it's the following Saturday, is our local Arbor Day celebration. Well, if you're not... It's also the plant sale. What is the whole? What's the day going to look like? What's the schedule, calendar of events?
Well, we're going to kick it off. It starts at 9 o'clock mm-hmm. on Saturday, June 6th, and we're going to kick it off with a brief Arbor Day ceremony. There's usually a presentation by one of the representatives from the Idaho Department of Lands, who they statewide oversee the all of the Tree City USA programs. And then a presentation by the mayor. And as soon as that is finished, then we'll open it up for the plant sale. And that will go on till 1 o'clock. And I might add that the museum is also open all day for free. Mm-hmm. They have their first free Saturday program. And this month, I believe it's Dr. and Mrs. Kenneth Conger are the sponsors for the day.
That's nice.
In addition to the native plant sale, we will also be having a bake sale as a fundraiser. So our members are contributing baked goods, and those will be available for a donation. And also, we'll be have gardeners on hand at the Arboretum to take people on tours. So if they want to see some of the native plants in the ground before they purchase them, they can do that. Of course, the Arboretum is open 24/7. People can always walk through there. It's a nice place to walk. And from now until frost, there will be something in bloom. That's anything else, Bob? Okay.
Well, I just wanted to add there are a number of different organizations involved. It's not just all the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society. Mm-hmm. The Sandpoint Tree Committee is organizing the actual Arbor Day ceremony. And the Sandpoint Tree Committee, that's another of my hats. I'm the chair of that committee at present. That's a citizens advisory committee that helps the city promote and manage its urban forestry program. So mm-hmm. they keep track on the street trees and do some tree planting every year. They have a tree planting program. A lot of good things go on out of that organization. Mm-hmm. It is a citizens advisory committee, and I will mention that we do have openings on the committee if anyone is interested. It does not require a lot of technical expertise, but just a interest in seeing the city's trees cared for and managed well.
Right.
So if anyone would be interested in that, please contact me. We are also looking for a member from the downtown business community as well. So we're always looking for new ideas and new people to get involved in that.
The tree committee, you kind of working with the parks department and the city government to just decide what
the parks department is separate from the tree committee. The forestry program comes under a different mm-hmm. urban forestry program comes under a different program or different department.
Mm-hmm. What are you what's the tree committee looking at doing this year? Are there going to be new trees that we'll see around town?
Yeah, I think that's our biggest program right now. Is we have a tree planting program called Neighbor Woods, and every year we have we recruit folks that in town that are looking to have trees planted along the city right of way. So that's between the curb and the sidewalk, mm-hmm. that planting strip there. The city is willing to purchase a tree and plant it at no cost to the owner, but the owner of the property, or if it's a renter, the renter can do this also. They need to come to a tree care workshop, and they need to agree that they're going to take care of that tree until it gets established for the first 3 years.
Ah.
So it's a good deal for everyone here.
Well, that's really interesting. Cool. Yeah. So they will, this is that little strip between the sidewalk and the street.
Yeah. Some cases it's just 2 or 3 feet wide, which would only accommodate a small tree, but in some places it's 10 or 12 feet or even 14 feet wide in this town. So
yeah.
So there's room for some very large trees as well. Some that will add a lot of canopy to the to the city.
That's nice, and I don't know, keeps it cool.
It does. Yeah, exactly.
It's a nice nice touch. I hope a lot of residents take you up on that. That's a great program, and wonderful idea. You mentioned a minute ago that the Tree City USA, I think we've discussed that on this program before, but for those not familiar, what's Tree City USA?
Tree City USA is another program that I think cities can use to promote their interest in keeping a good forest canopy and keeping a good green city. So it's a very positive thing to be called a Tree City USA. There are several requirements that a city has to do to get that designation. One, they need to have an Arbor Day celebration with a proclamation by the mayor, and they need to have a tree committee, which we do have,
mm-hmm.
and they do have certain minimum spending requirements. I think it's $2 per resident per year on tree management, tree planting, something related to the tree care.
Mm-hmm. Sandpoint is then a Tree City USA.
They are, and this is actually our 17th consecutive year as a Tree City USA.
Ah, congratulations. What are you going to... I hope there's a celebration.
Yeah.
I hope there's a celebration plan for the 20th anniversary.
I hope there will be, yes, yeah, many
big,
more.
Big one. Oh, yeah. Also, you mentioned earlier there's going to be a bake sale at the Native Plants at the Arbor Day celebration. And now, now you're talking. I'm not... That's where I'm going to be. I don't think I'll be buying any native plants this year because I don't have anywhere to put them.
Exactly. But, you don't have to buy the plants. You can come out and get mm-hmm. some baked goods and coffee. We'll have coffee as well mm-hmm. and take a tour of the Arboretum.
You can enjoy the plants even if you don't buy them.
Yeah. Exactly.
There we go.
Again, that's Saturday, mm-hmm. June the 6th,
mm-hmm.
9 a.m. to 1 p.m., Lakeview Park, which is next to the Bonner County Historical Museum.
And I'd like to mention that on a hot summer day, there isn't a better place in town than the Arboretum.
It does keep it cool back there,
cool.
Doesn't it?
There's mm-hmm. a breeze off the lake there, well, the river by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is absolutely lovely. There's not a better place for a picnic
mm-hmm.
or just mm-hmm. a stroll.
My in a former career, I actually worked for the Parks Department for a summer, and I do remember on those hot days in August, you'd look at the calendar, and on the hottest day of the week, you would try to plan on on mowing the lawn over at Lakeview Park on that day, and trimming around the trees to try and get some of that cool air. I remember that is a very refreshing part of mm-hmm. town, about the some real relief to be had back there. Well, Gail and Bob, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Did we cover
everything? Am I missing any details?
I think we got a lot in here in a half hour.
Yeah, we did. I think one more time, give us the where, when, why about the Arbor Day celebration.
Okay, Arbor Day celebration mm-hmm. in conjunction with the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society will be on mm-hmm. Saturday, June the 6th. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Lakeview Park, which is located next to the Bonner County Historical Museum.
On Ella.
Mm-hmm. You can also access it through the boat launch station, too, mm-hmm. and come in the other direction from the from the east. But
come in on your canoe.
You can come in by water, too. Mm-hmm. Yes. You can, thank you very much for having us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for joining us this morning. That's June 6th, over at Lakeview Park. Not gonna want to miss that. And hopefully the weather holds. Ooh, what happens if it rains?
Oh, well, we have
big trees.
We have canopies that we put up for mm-hmm. the stations, but the first year we did this at mm-hmm. the Arboretum, it did rain.
Mm-hmm.
It did not keep people away. This is North Idaho. We're kind of accustomed to rain.
Mm-hmm.
And people were lining up to buy the plants. We had people with wheelbarrows and little red wagons. We will be there, rain or shine.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I think we're going to, a little later in the hour, we've got some tickets to give away, by the way. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Bob Wilson and Gail Boland, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
We'll be back with some folks from the Friends of Scotchman Peaks to talk about what's going on in their organization. Right now, it's time for a little trip back in time, about 20 years to 1995. Exactly 20 years ago is when Hootie and the Blowfish started their four-week run at number one with their album Cracked Rearview. So often when I'm talking about what happened this week in music history, I do not get to actually personally remember it. But this I remember. I remember when Hootie and the Blowfish was all over your radio dial. Here's Only Wanna Be With You. They're one of the big hits off of Cracked Rearview. 20 years ago this week. I hope that doesn't make you feel too old. Hootie and the Blowfish, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY. The KRFY Morning Show is broadcast every Tuesday and Thursday, live at 8 a.m. Tune in to 88.5 or stream us live from our website at 8 o'clock to hear the complete and unedited program, including musical selections. Due to our licensing, we are unable to include full songs in our downloadable podcasts. We now return to the KRFY Morning Show. Yeah, that is Hootie and the Blowfish, and you're listening to 88.5 KRFY. That album, Cracked Rearview, just came out 20 short years ago this week. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Thanks to Gail and Bob from the Native Plant Society for stopping in, and we have exchanged them here in the studio for Phil and Doug. Good morning, you two.
Good morning, Jack.
Morning, Diane. Good morning.
Well, what brings you into the studio this morning, you guys?
Well, this evening we have our annual State of the Scotchman's event at the Forest Bird Charter School at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And our featured guest tonight will be wilderness historian, activist, and longtime friend and mentor, Doug Scott.
Aha! Well, and here he is in the
flesh, such as it is.
Yes. The Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness Area has their... Did you say this is an annual meeting?
It is. It's our annual meeting. Mm-hmm. We call it our State of the Scotchman's. I'll provide a little bit of an update on some of the recent exciting news we've had.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a few minutes on the podium for Commissioners Carrie Kelly and Glenn Bailey to talk about the resolution that the Bonner County Commission passed asking for our delegation to take action on the Scotchman Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give out our annual Volunteer of the Year Award and a few certificates to outstanding volunteers. And then Doug will take over, entertain us for about an hour with some of the history of the Wilderness Act and how groups like ours have helped to bring new areas into the system.
Mm-hmm. Is this open to the public or just friends?
Open to the public, free of charge. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your neighbors. Find someone on the street who's new to Sandpoint and introduce them to the community.
We'll have to give all those details again. I think the who, the where, the when, the why. But Diane,
looking through this, I see that you will also announce the Old Goat of the Year.
That's our Volunteer of the Year Award.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Uh-huh. This will be the seventh year we've done it, and we've had quite a stellar cast of people who have received it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's much anticipated, highly secret. If I told you, we'd have to go off the air and bleep it out.
Okay. So no one knows yet.
No one knows yet.
Good.
Including, I just love the title.
Yeah. It will be, and the old goat himself or herself does not know.
Does not know.
Okay.
Nope.
Well, that'll be fun. Doug, what's your story? How did you get here? How did you, and what do you know about the Wilderness Act?
Well, I had the good fortune very shortly after the Wilderness Act became law in 1964, I stumbled into Washington, D.C. and started working first for the Wilderness Society, then for the Sierra Club and other national organizations as a lobbyist working to help persuade Congress to establish more wilderness areas. At that time, we were just getting the groundwork done. The wilderness, the ink was just dry on the Wilderness Act itself. And some of the implications of how it was to be applied on the land had to be worked out. Congress had to get in the act. The agencies didn't always get it right. So there was a period of intense adjustment that I was very closely involved in particular with Senator Frank Church, who became a dear friend and had been one of the leaders for the Wilderness Act when it was being debated in the Senate. So I've always felt a sense of obligation since I've lived longer than anybody. I mean, that, in that era, there weren't interns. I wasn't an intern. I just hit the ground running as a lobbyist because there were three of us that went to Capitol Hill to work on wilderness. And at that time, the Sierra Club had one person in Washington, D.C., and to cover everything that they were interested in.
Wow.
And so it was, talk about a journeyman's education. It was just a fabulous experience. And I got to hang around with, like Frank Church, some of the great people who'd been responsible for the enactment of the Wilderness Act itself. And I feel a real obligation in writing my books and in running around the country and giving talks, as I will this evening, to transmit some of that, some of the lore, some of the whys and wherefores. What kinds of things led Congress to decide that we needed this protection? And it's fun to follow your friends at the Native Plant Society here today, because there is no stronger form of nature protection available anywhere, not just in the United States, but anywhere. The rest of the world looks to our Wilderness Act as the model. It is the gold standard for preserving the wildest, most natural of our federal lands, including the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness.
Nice when we do something right.
Yeah, very nice.
I'm a little bit familiar with the Wilderness Act, but this was, so in 64, we of course already had national forests, national parks. What was the impetus? Why did we feel that we needed wilderness areas as well?
It became, well, first of all, it's important to know historically that the leadership of both the National Park Service and the U.S. Forest Service opposed the Wilderness Act vehemently.
Oh, interesting.
For as long as they could get away with it.
I did not.
And that was because I use the term lovingly, bureaucrat, likes to give up their discretion to do things, whatever they might choose to do in the future. Well, that's the whole idea of the Wilderness Act. And the conservation leaders at the time just felt they had no choice, because there had been, and to their credit, the Forest Service had established a bunch of places that were already given administrative protection as wilderness, but the boundaries kept moving. Someone would say, I'd like to chop down that tree, and suddenly that boundary got, stroke of a pen, got changed. And there were so many episodes of that, that the conservation leaders of the time just felt, there's no future for our wilderness if the protection is paper thin. And we just have to go for a law. And I'll tell you what, in that era, the idea of passing such a law in Congress was daunting, to say the least. You know, we were way before the coming of the environmental era and Earth Day and all that stuff. In the 50s, it was just a different time.
You know, if I could chime in here, I think I've been doing a lot of reading, and lifelong wilderness lover, user, and now tenure advocate. And so my perspective on this is that as we look at our public lands, principally our National Forest, Bureau of Land Management, and National Park System, we have an area that's being held in the public trust for a broad variety of uses. Some of those have been, as Doug alluded to, set aside administratively. What we really look at with the wilderness area is setting aside within that framework of public lands areas that aren't going to be used just today, but are being set aside for our future generations. And so we're setting some longer-term visions on a portion of those lands that are already being managed in the public trust for the future trust.
Within wilderness areas, there are restrictions on use, and usually, you can't take motorized vehicles in a wilderness area, correct?
Right, correct.
Things like that. It's a very... The idea is that it's very pristine. As you said, it's the gold standard.
Yes.
Yeah. Just totally natural, or as natural as it possibly can be.
As untouched by the hand of man as can possibly be.
Right. untrammeled or something.
Untrammeled,
right? I've heard
that's
that word.
The word.
Yeah. Well, in your years in Washington D.C., what was the? I don't know. Did you ever have to ruffle any feathers or anything while you were there?
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. The most seriously ruffled feathers, generally speaking, and certainly this will be the case with the Scotchman Peaks. It's been the case with every one of Idaho's great wilderness areas. The support of the local congressional delegation is vital. Members of Congress are not going to impose their will on somebody else's district for the simple reason that they don't want that somebody else imposing their will on their district.
Mm-hmm.
And the one giant exception to that was the epical campaign for the Alaska Lands Act, which Jimmy Carter signed in 1980. And I was the chief lobbyist on far the largest campaign that the conservation movement ever mounted. We're talking 110 million acres of new national parks, new national wildlife refuges, and as close as possible on an ecosystem basis. You know, you look at Yellowstone, its boundaries are square. It doesn't have anything to do with where the animals roam and all that sort of thing. And in Alaska, we were able to do this on a very large scale, and it involved rolling the Alaska congressional delegation. And that was no one, and they got their pound of flesh in the process, but it was, and I'll tell you what, to this day, and I've heard him more than once, Jimmy Carter will tell you that he will be remembered for two things, the Camp David Accords and the Alaska Lands Act. And he was deeply involved personally and had a full-time lobbyist, his lobbyist working it with us.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Interesting.
Despite the rare exception, the wilderness proceeds bipartisan with broad community support. Certainly new wilderness areas in this age are only going to come about when congressional delegations see the local voices want it to happen. And a broad collection of local voices, our work as the Friends over the last 10 years have been to develop that local consensus and develop that local voice. Part of what we're going to talk about tonight is some of our recent progress in the last couple of months. We've had a stunning resolution passed by the Bonner County Commission unanimously resolving to ask the delegation to introduce legislation for the Scotchman Peaks. We've had a letter signed by each individual board member of the Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce, some of the locally most prominent business people signing on to that letter asking the same thing. We've had wonderful editorials in the Daily Bee as well as the Missoulian and the Spokesman Review. All of that culminated with a trip last week to D.C., in which I visited with both of our senators, our congressmen, and the two senators and congressmen from Montana. I won't belabor everyone here with all of the details except to say we're gaining traction.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a position that as things continue to develop in Congress, we've been sent encouraging signs by our state's delegation, and we'll talk a little bit more about that tonight. But I think in the next month or two or three, we will see some serious activity.
That's very, yeah.
And what, just to reinforce what Phil used, a couple of important ideas there. One is that this work has always been nonpartisan. From the day the Wilderness Act was introduced in 1956 by a liberal Democrat in the Senate and a very conservative Republican in the House, right up to the present. The other vital point is that these things only get to Congress, only get any traction in Congress, and only reach the president's desk when there's a very broad coalition of support back home. The broader, the better. No one will be surprised that the Sierra Club chapter thinks a wilderness proposal is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's counterintuitive, or at least surprising, and therefore sticks in your mind when it's the Chamber of Commerce unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
When it's the board of a Republican Board of County Commissioners.
Yeah.
That demonstrates, that says to any elected official who is looking at that fact, something's going on at the grassroots that I need to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick up on it. And our work, the work so magnificently being done by the Friends of Scotchman Peaks, is continue to develop and deepen and strengthen and encourage the voices of that broad community coalition. And this one is a little more complicated than most because it falls in two states.
Mm-hmm.
And three counties.
Two states, three counties, two different national forests. It overlaps a lot, too. So you have small gerrymandered bits of land that to bring together in a comprehensive package, this intent going forward is really important for the landscape so it doesn't get further fractured.
The it's three counties. It's two states, three counties. Mm-hmm. We've got the Bonner County Commission mm-hmm. on board.
Right.
How about the other counties? How's the support there?
That's a great question. And so just mm-hmm. for clarity, the Bonner County Commission and the mm-hmm. local folks that I've mentioned have asked the Idaho delegation to take action on the Idaho portion. Mm-hmm. As Doug mentioned earlier, folks who have within their framework management responsibilities or governmental responsibilities for areas don't like necessarily to extend past their lines. So the Bonner County commissioners are going to talk about what they want for Bonner County. The Sanders County commissioners are going to talk about what they want, and the Lincoln County of Montana. Mm. Right now, we're focused on the Idaho portion because we have the strongest support and the best signals from our Idaho congressional delegation that they might be willing to do something in the near future. In Montana, we're tracking very similarly. We have a strong level of support in Sanders County. We're working on that in Lincoln County. The Montana delegation collectively is looking at the issues of wilderness and timber and other natural resources on a very large scale, hoping to do something more regional or on a statewide basis that might include the Scotchman Peaks, but it would be a part of a larger puzzle they're working on.
Hmm. So this is it possible to have like a Scotchman Peaks wilderness established that is maybe smaller than you want and for it to expand mm-hmm. in the future?
Yeah, the history is, Doug can tell you many great anecdotes about how Congress has added incrementally to specific areas over mm-hmm. time, and specifically where there might be two states or two large units that have some distinction, it's not uncommon for those units to be adopted separately. The politics, mm-hmm. again, lining up in the state of Idaho differently than they line up in the state of Montana, with less to do about the Scotchman Peaks than simply the statewide politics.
Mm-hmm. And in the last Congress, two new wilderness areas were established in Montana, but they were additions to existing wilderness areas. And they were done on a bipartisan basis. The delegation there includes a Democratic senior senator, and the now junior senator was then the House member. And they worked very collaboratively to get that done.
Uh-huh.
And the same drill, the local dude ranchers, the local cowboys, the local property owners, small town businesses wanted these areas protected.
Mm-hmm.
And as is always the case, the boundaries were moved around and fiddled with to get something that kind of worked for everybody. In this case of the Scotchman Peaks, we're dealing with a recently completed forest plan, which took 15 years or thereabouts to be done. And the boundary of the wilderness proposed by Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness is as recommended by the U.S. Forest Service. Hmm. So we're not in an argument with the agency at all.
Nice. It sounds sounds very promising.
We're very hopeful. And again, we had some very encouraging conversations, specifically with Senator Crapo and Senator Risch. Right now, Senator Risch is leading an effort to establish the Boulder White Clouds as a wilderness area down in central southern Idaho, along with Congressman Mike Simpson. It's in his district.
Mm-hmm.
It had a hearing last week, and I attended the hearing. And at the end of that hearing, Senator Risch, to close, actually mentioned the prospects for Scotchman Peaks Wilderness in very encouraging terms to the rest of his committee members present.
Ah.
And so that's a big step forward that he's uttering the words publicly in front of a congressional hearing for the congressional record.
But to know exactly what those words were, come this evening.
Thank you, Doug.
That's a good plug. Yep. Let's talk one more time about this evening. When and where?
So 6 p.m. at mm-hmm. the Forest Bird Charter School, which most folks in Sandpoint are familiar with. If you're coming from out of town, the directions are a little convoluted. Best to go to MapQuest or Google Maps.
Yes.
Complimentary appetizers, no host bar. It's family friendly. We hope to have a good crowd, a good bit of mixing, mingling, socializing, and celebrating of our success in our community.
At 6 p.m.
6 tonight. P.m.
Tonight. Okay. Well, that sounds very, very rewarding to me. And you can see the old goat, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
And And perhaps it's the final point here that up there on the mountain someplace is the newest goat. And that goat will be an old goat someday, thanks to the wilderness protection.
Thank you, Doug.
Doug Scott and Phil Huff, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Jack.
The Scotchman Peaks, I forget what the official event is called.
The State of the Scotchman.
The State of the Scotchman is tonight at the Forest Embird Charter School at 6 o'clock. We have to talk about some more events coming up this weekend, actually, and we've got some people waiting in the wings to jump in about that. I wish we had more time because I could talk about this stuff all day. This is very interesting. Doug, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll be back someday.
And of course,
maybe talk again.
It's going to be one heck of a celebration.
Here's Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies with a song called "The Fix." They're playing this Friday at the Panada Theater as part of a benefit for KRFY. Tickets to be given away a little later on today. Right now, you're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. We'll be back with representatives from a local organization who's got something going on this weekend. You won't want to miss it. Stick around. And here's Lindsay Lou. The KRFY Morning Show is broadcast every Tuesday and Thursday, live at 8 a.m. Tune in to 88.5 or stream us live from our website at 8 o'clock to hear the complete and unedited program, including musical selections. Due to our licensing, we are unable to include full songs in our downloadable podcasts. We now return to the KRFY Morning Show. That's Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies. They are playing tomorrow night at the Panada Theater. Right now, we have yet another pair of guests in, this time from Food for Our Children. Two new to me representatives of Food for Our Children. Actually, I've seen you guys both around town and at other times up at the radio station. But last time we had people from Food for Our Children, they were different faces. How did you guys get involved with this organization?
Right. I'm recently a board member. So my name is Michelle Murphy, and I run the School Garden Project, so that's why I got involved. And then we are having a fundraiser this Saturday at Evans Brothers, Saturday, May 30th from 5 to 9. And so Rick Evans is here with us as well. And so the Evans Brothers reached out to Food for Our Children to start this fundraiser. This is our first fundraiser, so it's great for us to get the word out about the organization. So we really appreciate them reaching out to us.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Rick Evans with Evans Brothers Coffee, and my brother Randy and I had recently put some time into discussing where we really wanted to focus efforts as far as our local charitable giving, and we support a lot of charities locally, including KRFY, but we decided kids, something around kids was really what spoke to us most deeply, and we wanted to make a bigger impact on our community. And so we learned about Food for Our Children and, you know, how big of an actual issue it is with the undernourished and underfed kids in this community. And the chance to get involved early on in this really, really important organization just really spoke to us. So we wanted to get involved, and so we approached them to do a fundraiser. We're going to be donating a portion of a quarter for every bag of coffee we sell for the rest of the year, and probably beyond that, is going to go directly to Food for Our Children. And during this event, actually, we're going to go ahead and do a dollar of every bag sold, and then 50 cents for every coffee drink we sell, you know, along with any other proceeds from the food and from the beverage and food. So.
Yeah, awesome. I don't think that people are really aware about the problem in our community, about how severe childhood hunger is. I think that the estimate is there's 2,000 children a day that are going hungry. You know, kids have access to school lunches and breakfasts, but then some of them don't even have the concept of what a dinner is. And then looking forward to the weekend, sometimes they don't have food at all. So what we'll be doing is increasing the nutritional value of the pouches that go home over the weekends. Right now there's a backpack program, but there's only 3 schools that are involved with it. So mm-hmm. That's leaving out 4 elementary schools and Head Start. So what we want to do is raise enough money to cover all of the schools. So this will get the word out. So we're really excited about our first fundraiser. And I should say we're having music. The band is...
Yeah, Bright Moments Jazz. Oh, really great. Excited to play. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. I just saw them last week. Great
okay.
band. Is the young woman with them as well? Do you know?
She's still in town.
Yeah, she's mm-hmm. still in town. We're hoping she'll be there. She had some dentist issues. So we're not quite sure.
Okay. Well, a great band anyway. Good music.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have refreshments. Jeff mm-hmm. from Ike Hearts is once again pulling together the refreshments and working with Steve and Julie at the winery. So, mm-hmm. and then we're having...
Jupiter Jane, who's got the traveling food truck. Mm-hmm. She'll be there with real healthy, organic, you know, tacos and other salads and other items. So
nice. Sounds like a blast.
Yeah.
Tell me again, when and where?
Evans Brothers Coffee, which is mm-hmm. 524 Church, right by the granary. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be from 5 to 9 p.m. this Saturday, May 30th. Hopefully outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. So. The weather looks promising. A little dodgy, but you'll probably make it. Well, great. Thanks for coming in, you guys.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, Michelle, to see that this is already... it's a relatively new organization that's already, you got...
It is. We were founded in February. So we are dreaming big. We don't want to, like their literature says, you know, not alleviate the poverty. We want to eliminate childhood poverty in Bonner County. So we've got a lot of work to do. So,
yeah.
Just getting started.
This is, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY. And the event is this Saturday from 5 to 9 at Evans Brothers Coffee. If you don't know where that is, I'm sure you can look it up online, but it's on Church Street, 524, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, thank you guys for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
I'm glad you stopped by. We actually have a couple of tickets to give away if people are interested. I think we've got enough time to give away tickets. Actually, how about this? Well, once Bird Note starts, that's when our callers can come in. Are you guys familiar with Bird Note?
No.
On 88.5 KRFY. 9 o'clock in the morning, we always have, it's a 2-minute show. It's actually, I think it's a 3-minute. Today it's about 2 minutes. It ranges between 2 and 3 minutes. And it's a daily program that features information about birds.
Okay.
What birds are up to today?
Here's your bird fix.
Cool.
Yeah. Today we're going to learn a little bit about the skylark, and apparently Aretha Franklin is going to be featured in this episode. Well, that's very interesting. I don't know anything about that. We will see. We will see what that's all about. The number here is 208-265-2992. As soon as Bird Note starts, that means this show is over, and I hope you'll give us a call, because I'm giving away a pair of tickets to whoever calls during Bird Note. And for now...
Tell them who the tickets are for.
Oh, it's for Patchy Sanders and Lindsay Liu. We have hyped that up a little bit earlier today, but it's Patchy Sanders and Lindsay Liu who are playing at the Panada this Friday during... At 7 o'clock, as part of a benefit for KRFY, or it's a benefit concert for KRFY. The phone number is 208-265-2992. Your phone number is what?
And if anyone has questions about the event or food for our children, they can call 208-391-5277.
That's very good. Give your number one more time.
208-391-5277.
Okay, don't call that if you want tickets. Call that if you want to help to feed our children in Bonner County. All right, this is the morning show on 88.5 KRFY. Thanks for listening, and for Diane, any final thoughts?
Nope.
Okay.
It
does sound like a busy weekend. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful day. Stay out of the rain. It looks like blue sky now. I think we're going to be safe. Okay, here's Aretha Franklin and the crew at Bird Note talking about the Skylark.